When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FitzDog Radio. I took a week off last week. We took off FitzDog Radio and Sunday Papers last week. It's just spring. Spring's here. Mike Gibbons was in Michigan picking up his daughter who graduated college from Michigan. Very impressive young woman. So they drove back across the country and FitzDog Radio. I forget what happened. I don't know. I just can't do it every single week. I was on the road. I was in Dayton, Kentucky, which, by the way, attendance was not what it could have been. And I blame myself. I was promoting Dayton, Ohio, because I didn't read the contract that my agent sent me. Dayton, Kentucky is basically a suburb of Cincinnati. And I was saying Dayton. Anyway, long story short, great club. There's this club and what was it called? The Commonwealth Sanctuary. It's an old church that they turned into this little comedy club. And it's getting great names, like Todd Barry just came through and Rory Scovel. And it's just like kind of a magic little place. And I just came up with so much new shit. It was amazing. Sometimes, smaller clubs are more conducive to being creative and taking risks. And I feel like the crowd really, they support you. They stay with you. It was pretty great. So anyway, if you're in that neck of the woods, check it out. They got some good acts coming up. Today, you could tell from the color in my face. I got color in my face today. I went out and I washed and waxed my own car, which when you don't love your car, you're not going to do that. But now I got my Mustang. It was like, I swear to you, it was like making love to an inanimate object. I was out there, washed it, dried it down with some towels, and then Windex the windows and wipe down the interior. And then I got the wax out and I got some thick pasty wax and I rubbed it in like small hard circles and then let it haze a little bit. And then I buffed it with these special towels that I bought at the automotive store and armor all the tires. And it looks fucking beautiful. It feels so good. And it's what I did when I was a teenager. I had a lot of jobs as a teenager, but one of them was I parked cars at a country club. And on the days that I wasn't parking cars, because all these golfers would come in, on the days that I wasn't parking cars, I would arrange with one of the members to hand wax his car while he was playing golf. So he'd show up, 8 a.m., I'd meet him at the club, grab the car, drive it to Tarrytown, which was about 15 minutes away, to my driveway, and I would hand wash and wax, and I would shampoo the upholstery. And I mean, I would only ask the best cars, the people with the best cars, because I was charging $125 cash, which back then was a lot of money. Nobody was getting that kind of money. And then they tip me on top of it. But anyway, I would come back to my house with a Rolls Royce or a Porsche. and I had this 1981 Corvette. It was a special engine block called an L84. It was super fast. And so I drove it to my house and I waxed the shit out of it. This thing was shining. It was like a dark green, but it looked black until you wax it, and then the green kind of came out. T-top roof, top was off. And so I'm driving through Tarrytown and we get to this road called the 117, which it kind of connects you from the country club to my house. And it's a long straightaway. And I pull up to the light, and sitting next to me is this kid named Clem McCann, who was a bully, who bullied me, who was very mean to me. I was very intimidated by him. He was what you called a motorhead. He was like one of the kids in town that, like, you know, bought muscle cars and fixed them up. And he was from this area called Weber Park. And anyway, so he had a 69 Mercury Cougar, which was a badass car. And he had it jacked up with a scoop on the hood. And so he had always, like, I don't know if he ever beat me up, but he would push me around. And I was afraid he was going to beat me up. And he was this shitty kid. I remember we went to the Grateful Dead at Madison Square Garden one time and like ran into him and his crew. And then he got all wasted and threw up on the shoes of a cop at Madison Square Garden. And everybody used to call him Puke on Your Shoes after that. And he was a redhead, you know, Clem McCann. Just sounds like some guy who lives in the fucking, you know, in the Appalachian Mountains. Smuggling moonshine, Clem McCann. I hope he's not listening to this. Anyway, so we get to the red light, and I'm sitting there, and he pulls up next to me, and he looks at me in this fucking Corvette, and he revs his engine, and I rev my engine. I'm like, all right, I'm going to blow this fucking old car off the road. This is, at the time, I believe it was the largest factory engine made in America. And it was a 5-speed. And so I'm like, all right, let's do it, Clem. And Billy Farrell sitting in the front seat. And I was like, all right, that's just adding weight, you two fat fucks. Light turns green. He guns it. Rubber peeling on the road. I gun it. And I pop the clutch and the car lurches and stalls. And I just see his fucking taillights pulling off. I was like, motherfucker! Could have redeemed myself. This could have been a story I told on a podcast years from now. But it wasn't to be. It wasn't meant to be. I hope Clem is fine. It's like I'm doing an interview on this podcast with Robbie Hoffman, and she talks about grace. She doesn't say that word, but she's describing grace. She's describing knowing that Clem was a fucked up kid, probably because he had fucked up parents or whatever his life situation was, made him ornery and a bully. And I forgive you, Clem, if you're listening right now. And I forgive your kids who are probably not great kids. And are probably beating up other kids in Tarrytown right now. So, new Pope. I haven't talked to you guys since the new Pope, Pope Leo. And it's very exciting. He's from Chicago, and I guess he is not a Cubs fan. He's a White Sox fan. Which is good that he's not a Cubs fan, because a lot of the past popes have been Cubs Scouts fans. And I guess he is a fan of the White Sox. I'm wondering if, because he's from Chicago, the wafer, the Eucharistic wafer will be deep dish. Is this on? Is this mic on? Can you hear me? These are my new Pope jokes, people. Been working in the clubs. Don't fucking judge me. All right. What else? I went on Yelp, and originally I was going to take my car into a car wash and get it hand detailed and waxed. But then I was looking at the reviews of the place I normally go to, and they were not good. And so I went on Yelp and I asked Yelp about what's the best car wash in Venice Beach. And first of all, Yelp now uses AI. So I'm writing what I need into the Yelp, but it's really putting it into AI. So it lists a bunch of shitty, like they're not even car washes. They're like car upholstery replay. It totally fucked the whole thing up. And then, so I get out of the window. Within 20 minutes, I've got a dozen spams from car wash places, specifically like custom car wash places where they come to you for $200 and do whatever, $300 and hand wash. When did Yelp become, when did they start spamming my shit out to businesses? First of all, Yelp is supposed to be neutral. It's supposed to be a place where it's user generated and it's a neutral arbiter for what's good and what's bad. And now, once again, it's another corporate behemoth that is just sucking the teat of the corporations, getting paid off. It's same with Consumer Reports. You go on Consumer Reports, I pay an annual fee so I can get an unfettered opinion on what is the best TV, what's the best blender, what's the best coffee maker. But then you go to the listings and it says, this brand is a sponsor of Consumer Reports. So Consumer Reports is taking advertising money from these products and then giving them better ratings. So what fucking point is it? Why am I paying this money? What's going on in this fucking country? Seriously, where are we headed? Yelp. What is Yelp? I used to talk about this. Yelp is just basically a device. It's an indication that we as a society have met our needs to such a gross degree that we are so spoiled that we have this device where we just go on and we complain about the shit that we take for granted. Like you talk about, you know, Roma's pizza place on Abbott Kinney. Two thumbs up your ass because the waiter didn't smile. What? How is the food? Well, fuck them. I want to ruin their business. It's like, can you imagine somebody from Pakistan or say a poor country? That's a poor country. What if they knew that there was a place where you complained about somebody bringing you food and they'd be like, but what, did they bring the food? Yeah, they brought the food, but the attitude wasn't, they weren't really kissing my ass. But why did they get, they had food, and they give it, why did they give it to you? Well, because I paid them to. But why did they not eat the food themselves? Well, because I don't know. There's no loyalty. Always yelping. Looking to jump to the next best thing. There's no loyalty in this world. I'm in a 25-year marriage. I've been in the same house for 23 years. Had the same friends. I just talked to my friend that I've been friends with since I was fucking 11 on the phone yesterday. Talked to my brother today. You don't change everything. Christ. I got the same style I've always had. Pretty marriage doesn't work and they get divorced. They lease their cars. I never leased a car in my life. I buy it and I run it into the ground. I've driven my cars for a decade, 15 years each, 20 years. Keep it simple. Nobody has family heirlooms anymore because they move so much. They had to downsize when they moved to Phoenix, so they sold grandma's china. Don't like your phone service? Switch. Like that. I always hated that guy from Can You Hear Me Now guy. He became a billionaire for, I guess it was Sprint. Was it Sprint? He started with Sprint and he was the Can You Hear Me Now? And they paid him money every year for you. And then one year he was working for fucking AT&T. Same guy. Now he's doing ads for AT&T. You piece of shit. How do you fucking live with that guy? If you're his wife, how do you live with that fucking traitor? That guy who will leave you for the next chick he shoots a commercial with if she's hotter. Fuck that guy. He's the guy that like lives in New York, and then if the Mets are playing better this year, he puts his Yankees cap away, buys a Mets cap. You know? So he's the mascot for millennials. You have no weight. You have no bearing. Anyway, I don't know how strong of a close that is, but welcome to the podcast. Welcome back. Sorry I missed last week. We got a bunch of good guests coming up in the near future. Steph Tolev and I got a bunch of people. I can't remember. But my guest this week is a very funny comedian who's got a bunch of cool stuff going on right now. I just saw her in Hacks. She's got a nice season run in Hacks this year. She's on FX's show Dying for Sex. Netflix is Verified. She's all over the press lately. And I just love her. I hang out with her Comedy Store a lot, and I've been wanting to get her on for a while. So we just talked today. And this is the intro for the interview. And now here's the interview. If you want to come see me, by the way, I should mention I will be in Tampa Bay at Side Splitters Comedy Club June 5th through the 7th. And then one night in Naples, Florida, Off the Hook, June 8th. Torrance, California, June 29th at the end. Then I will be at the Comedy Mothership in Austin, July 4th through the 6th. Point Pleasant, New Jersey at Uncle Vinny's August 1st and 2nd. Then I'll be in La Jolla, Vegas, Chicago, New Orleans. Go to fitzdog.com, get some tickets, support the show. And here we go. Here is my chat with the wonderful Robbie Hoffman. Robbie Hoffman is my guest. Welcome.
Oh,
what a beginning. You
what
came
beginning.
In.
I come in too hot.
Well, you came in early, which is very, early.
Very
unlike
pee.
A comedian.
I had to pee so badly.
I thought you were actually going to go in your pants.
Oh, I had to pee. And I am unlike, I'm very punctual.
Yeah.
I get that from my mother.
Yeah. It's a very good quality. I can't.
To us, on time is late.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've lost opportunities in life. I've gotten to meetings late, and it starts the whole thing off in
bad
energy. Right.
It could never be me. I'd rather wait for you.
Uh-huh.
I'm like the teacher at the front of a rowdy class. She just
waits,
and they'll settle down.
Yeah.
You know, if she talks or tries to do anything, if she just stays there waiting, they feel the disappointment more than anything she can say.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. That's the way I am. Like my mother had such a reverence for doctors. You know, we went once a year for annual checkup so she could send us away to a camp, but day camp, not concentration.
And, I know, and you're Jewish, you really have to make the distinction.
Yeah. And we were at the doctor's office before the shit opened. I remember it's like, the building's not open. Security is like unkeying. And I'm like, Mom, she's like, I brought a book, you, because she would never keep a doctor waiting, even though they had a waiting room.
Yeah.
Like she, and my sister also, like if she says she's coming over for noon, it's like, my other sister's like, scram. She's like, you know, she'll be here 10:30.
Yeah.
Because my sister is like, if you're late for my older sister, she's like, if the queen invited you for dinner, would you be late?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. And she's like, I'm your sister. Like,
You don't even know the queen. Yeah.
You don't love the queen. You love me. I'm your flesh and blood.
Right.
So we've just been ingrained. We're very...
Well, for your mom, with having... Would you have 10 kids in your family?
Yes, we have.
When you've got 10 kids and you're a single mom, being on time, if you're not, then stuff gets backed up. If you don't get the dinner on time, that means the baths aren't on time. That means the pajamas aren't on time. All of a sudden, it's 1 a.m.
It's amazing to me that people think... Like, I watch a lot of, like, lifestyle programming, TLC, Disastrous Families. I watch Sister Wives and Poly Family and all things with big families, the Kardashians. I just relate to a lot of voices, you know, coexisting at the same time. And the more chaotic, the better. And it's like when I was watching, like, you know, John and Kate Plus 8 or any of these trash shows, It's like their big thing was like getting people out of the house is the hardest thing. It's like, I don't know. My mother, we didn't even have the car. We were on the bus and we were on time.
Really? That's amazing.
Like
yes,
it was
buses.
Like, yeah, we took transit. Yeah, my mom didn't doesn't own a have car. No, she doesn't have a license. My mother, not even.
Wow.
That still doesn't have a license.
Damn. Yeah. And if with 10 kids, you're at a certain time, they're probably going to 3 or 4 different schools
well,
at the
we
same
knew,
time.
Yeah,
right?
And we knew the bus routes. Like if you miss the 12:13, it's not coming till 12:47.
Right.
So there goes the doctor's appointment. So we're a half hour early or a half hour late.
Yes.
You know, when you're on a bus schedule, maybe it's the bus comes 4 times an hour is nice, but sometimes twice an hour. There's sort of very rare buses that come once an hour. So it's either she'd rather take the hour early bus than the hour late bus.
Right.
But people who can't get, you know, I have friends now who have 1 or 2 kids. Like, we can't get out of the house.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, it really is on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is on
and
you.
And it's a team effort.
Thank
and
you so much for this coffee. See how easy I am? I come in.
You really are. You're a piece of cake. You're a piece of cake and you're good. Here's the thing I like about you is there's new comics. Like, I love the Comedy Store because you get to see comics that, you know, I wouldn't know you. You know, eventually I would have met you somewhere else. But
now
like,
I know of you because my brother Shmuley, shout out to Shmuley, who thought somebody was you.
Yeah.
And took a picture and I let him think that because it was very fast and I made it seem like these celeb types and I'm like just going for the pic and he's like I'll go out and now he's like, will you tell Greg Feast I see low I'm like Shmuley here he is
didn't we put him on a FaceTime one time
we put him on everything every time I see you it's never enough for him
I gotta meet him someday.
He likes it every time. He just left my house. My little sister graduated. But you were going on to compliment me. You're
well,
at the
I was,
store.
Well, what I was gonna say is like you see new comics, they come up, and there's a lot of people going into comedy. Mm. When I started, it was for the misfits. It was for it was for the alcoholics and the people with ADD and depression and abuse and like and then all of a sudden comedy is like, you know, you got some kid who's graduating from Penn State, and he's got a degree in marketing.
Yeah.
And he just decided, well, he's no life story, no background, nothing interesting's happened in his life.
No.
And then I see somebody like you come along where, I mean, I don't know how much people are familiar with. Most people know your story, but if they don't, you know, you grew up in an Orthodox home with 10 kids. You moved from Brooklyn to Montreal.
Yeah, wow. You
you
know
had
a lot.
No dad. You came out at what age?
I was outed brutally at about 17 or 18.
So, I mean, you've lived a life. Like, that's something you can draw, not just material from, but it gives you a state of mind about life that's something... like you've had to be in control of your life.
Yeah, you know what? I'm like old at heart. You know how people are young at heart. I like feel like a trans person in the way that like I'm like 73 stuck in my 30 something body. I'll finally get this. You know, a trans person, they finally have all their surgeries. They go through all the cosmetics and the stuff and finally at a certain point they look in the mirror and who they are matches who they've been inside.
Right.
I feel like I'm going to turn 93, look in the mirror, and finally my body will match who the hell I've been.
So you,
and my program's on.
You identify as a ma'am.
As a ma'am.
As a ma'am.
Yeah, like a very old, like I'm going to be like, and Jeopardy's on in the other room. But at the same time, I have like a child like growing up so different. I'm still endlessly, I'm either 7 or I'm 73.
Yeah.
And to say on the point of some other people, I don't have any qualm with anyone. Like, there are people I know who do clips only or whatever, and they do very well with that.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who went to Harvard and have become incredible entertainers. Conan comes to mind or things like that. And honestly, I have no... Like, to me, I want everybody to be doing... them and whatever however the best they can be it is great. Like for me, I work hard, I write hard, you know, I write a lot, I do a lot, I take stuff seriously, but at the same time I love to watch somebody like Pete Davidson who kind of dials it in, whether it's on purpose or not. He can smoke and kind of roll with it and it's very loose, because that's the opposite to me. I wouldn't consider myself loose and laid back. So You just have to know what you're doing and do that thing. But I don't, you know, I don't. Some people get so jealous in the scene. Oh, Matt Rife is doing clips and he got so big on this. I'm like, he fucking killed it.
Right, right.
He did his shit. I don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. That said, he did something and it worked.
Right.
You can't, I can't ever be mad at that.
No, and all boats rise with the tide, not just in, like, at the comedy. He started working at the Comedy Store.
Great.
Actually, he wasn't past.
Well, we were past the same week. I will say this. Matt Rife and I were past the same week.
Congratulations.
Which is phenomenal. Yep. And he was a lovely guy. Like, I don't have any qualms about that. I think I have a more general qualm of being impoverished and it being less and less accessible to people without resources to pursue their dreams and passions. That's where it lies. But not...
Wait, can you explain that?
Like, you know, more and more, it's very like... It's becoming fewer and further between that people without support become artists.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, you know what I mean? So now we do have a lot more of what you're talking about. These people who went to Penn. Yeah, like they have nothing to lose. Like they don't, you know, they can work on their music. They can work on their comedy. Versus kids like me who are working full time. Will, you know, Will's also doing this full time, you know?
Right.
But. So that's where the inequality, but not like, I also don't falter those kids. It's like, what do you want? Like Will Smith's kid making music. It's like, what do you want this kid to do? Work at the
bank?
Exactly. Right. You want Will Smith's kid, Jaden, at the bank. Like, that's even weirder. Like, let nepos nepo too. You know, let rich kids be rich. Like, they can only be who they are.
Right.
It's the systems that I have problems with that can be more equal, but not the individuals.
Yeah. No, I think the problem is you've got these starting jobs in the industry. Say you want to become an agent, right? That's your dream for whatever reason.
This is a great example. Yes.
Now, if you want to become an agent, you have to work as an assistant where they're paying you not enough money to pay your rent. You're working 12-hour days.
Yeah, often free. You start in an internship.
You start an internship for free. So who can afford that? Rich people, kids. Nepo kids. And it's the same thing with stand-up. Like, nowadays, it's so competitive to get. So, like, when I started, I started in college, and I was literally making a living by the time I graduated because there was so much work in New England.
Right.
And not to say I was a good comedian. I had a car, and I could do 15 minutes of material. And with that, I could make $500 a week in cash and make a living. Nowadays, you have to spend 10 years to even get to the point where you're featuring on the road and making 500, same amount that people were making when I was doing it. And meanwhile, the clubs are making more money than ever.
Are they? I don't know. I ebb and flow. I think the Comedy Store is about to pop off again in a big way. And it's not just because I'm there, but I think there's a new vibe. I think it kind of took this dip in COVID, but I think now with some new blood in there, and I think just the energy the past few weeks with this booker here has been off the charts.
Right.
You know, that's why I can never be mad at somebody like Matt Rife, or somebody who thinks that he got something that they didn't get or something like that. Because it's like, if he fills the club and I get to do 3 sold out shows because of him, I'm grateful to him.
Well, not only that,
you know what I mean? It's a better show for me. More people know me. So I just feel like it's a good mix to have all the mix there.
Sure. Yeah. Now there's a new guy there that is a guitar act. And traditionally people mock people that play guitar on stage because somehow it's a crutch. It's not a crutch at all. This guy happens to be an amazing comedian who plays guitar. And and sometimes I think people like that were kept out of the Comedy Store, and now he's in. And and also, like Matt Rife, there's always a comic that is the whipping boy. You know, it was...
And it's because he's successful. You wouldn't be talking about him if he wasn't huge.
And I watched his clips because I didn't know him really. And you know what? He's fucking really good at crowd work. Like amazing at it.
Yeah.
And
so I don't know. I don't. And also, I don't think everything is fair or everything is high. I didn't grow up with that. But it's not our job. I do think the system's job is to, we need to rework the system, not the individuals who, you know, like Plinko, you're a rich kid, you're poor, you're whatever. Okay, then we all have to deal with the cards. But the systems should be set up to help out everybody a little bit more.
Well, one system that's very productive for fostering talent is that the door people at the Comedy right. Store get to do sets because then they can make a living
yeah.
at a club. If people don't know this, all the security, some of the wait staff, door people, ticket takers, they all do comedy. And so they get to do two or three spots a week. But in order to get the job as a door guy, you have to audition so they make sure that you're good enough of a comedian. And then it becomes sort of like an internship.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. I mean, yeah, you know, it's interesting to me. I met somebody who was working at a restaurant and trying to be a comedian. It's like, you can't.
No.
You need a day job.
Exactly.
Like, this is a nighttime thing. So the door guy, the only thing that would worry me is the schedule because I'd want to be going out.
To other clubs.
So I don't know. But then again, I never got to take any of those things. So
yeah.
I don't know. But but there's been some real success from that. I mean, wasn't Tony Hinchcliffe a door guy?
Tony Hinchcliffe, Ari Shaffir, Marc Maron.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, so the list goes on and on. It's
crazy. The list goes on and on. So Ali Makovsky, I know, was a door guy. Yep. So I don't know.
Was your day job when you were first starting stand-up?
I was an accountant.
Oh, right. You went to college for that?
Yes. I got into McGill University in Montreal where I was living. It was the only school I applied to because it was free to apply.
Wow.
And my thing was like, well, I have to work or I got to go into something I could pay this back.
Yeah.
Like but I ended up getting a scholarship for the first year. So it was $6,000 I didn't have to pay. And in Montreal, I mean, it's a world-class school. It's $3,000 a semester.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's expensive because the other school, which is less of a brand, is like $2,000 or $1,800 a semester.
Yeah.
But still at the time when I'm like, how am I going to $2,000? Like I couldn't even imagine such sums.
Right.
And so I was told by an academic advisor if I go into accounting. And I always liked math and arts. I liked both. That they'll give me a job that summer. I'll get a laptop for keeps.
Really?
Yeah. So I was like, bro, I got a laptop. Like, you know. And it was a really good job.
Yeah.
It was and every 2 weeks I was paid. I remember my brother Shmuley showed up. My mother wanted him. He was working at Purolator, which is like FedEx in Canada. Do we have Purolator at all?
No.
Okay, so it's like FedEx or USPS. And he showed up to my office, this big office building. I was like a junior. I was making like, you know, $32,000 a year or something, which was amazing even to have a salary. But he showed up with the oranges, like looking for a job. And I'm like, what's bribery with these oranges? And then it's like, my mother was like, can't you help him with the job? I'm like, Mom, I went to university. Like, I literally
Wait, your brother says, I want to visit you in the office.
No, so my mother was like, he showed up with a resume and like oranges. Like he's going to like, I'm like, who am I giving these oranges to?
I love that. Hey, you know what? That might fucking work, actually. Nobody does that.
No,
be
nobody
the guy that shows
that.
Up with oranges.
I remember being in the lobby and the lobby looks like out of a movie. You know, it's like to me, it was like Devil Wears Prada. I'm like in this huge office building downtown. Like I went to university for this thing. I got it. Yeah. Got the fucking thing.
All right.
And now I'm getting paid every 2 weeks. It's directly in the account.
You got your own apartment?
Yes. I moved out at like 17. I was living on my own.
What about wardrobe when you get into a corporate job like
they
that?
They gave you $5,000.
No.
Yes. Yes. I went to Jacob, which for anyone in Canada knows, it's that women's like suit store. I bought a $300 suit. I bought two of them. I pocketed the rest of the money. I just wore the same things. I changed out my shirts a lot, but I wore the same suit.
Yeah. Why not?
What do you care?
Unbelievable. Yeah. So you're in Montreal and you're going out to, was it the Comedy Nest? Is that the club in Montreal?
I did the Comedy Works.
Comedy Works, right.
And I did, the Comedy Nest.
Uh-huh.
So they've never been too... It was the kind of scene, Montreal. I was only in Montreal for a year and a half before I moved to Toronto, where I really like hit the ground running. It was a very like bitter scene.
Yeah.
I will say. It was, first of all, they had the big festival there, but it had nothing to do with the local scene.
That's
so there was
what
a
I've
lot of
heard.
Resentment.
Yeah, they don't take
a lot
care
of resentment
the
there from the older comics.
Right.
Some of the comics that were really stale. They were, you know, much older than me at the time, maybe in their 40s and 50s. And doing the same 5, doing the same 10, because whatever, that's they're staying in Montreal. They're not really, you know. And I was funny early
mm-hmm.
on right away. And for me, you know, I would get lectures from some of these guys, like, it takes, you know, 10 years, like that thing you were saying, like, it takes 10 years, like, to get funny. But they were, like, saying it's differently than you. They were saying it takes 10 years to find your voice, not right. to make your money. You know, take 10 years to find your voice. And that was the opposite what I had. Everybody asked me where I come from, that I had such a, that was the first thing I had. So it really right. didn't matter the content I spoke about. Anything that was being talked about, even if I talked about it, it was always in a different way. It was a new take. Right. It was somebody.
Nobody's gonna steal your joke.
It was fresh, you yes. know. It was like it could be tough, but nobody was looking at, you know, just because the curiosity in which I entered the world or something. But they resented that. I remember doing very well on the open mic nights, and always being kind.
Uh-huh.
Which I think people are surprised by me because I'm aggressive but kind, opposite Ellen. Okay, she pretends to be kind, but you find out she's a terror. Right, I come off aggressive, rough around the edges. I'm actually a delight, am I not?
Let me tell you something. I wrote for Ellen DeGeneres for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I've known you for 2 years, and vastly different experiences so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Care to elaborate, or you're too?
Oh, no. Look, I won 4 Emmy Awards, so I've made a lot of money. It was a really good producer credit. It got me other work.
That's
amazing. I met some people that I absolutely love. And you know what? Most of the people I've written for TV for 20 years, and
yeah.
I've written for some monsters. And after a while, the staff knows they're a monster,
right.
and you get extremely close because you're supporting each other and you're easing the tension with each other
right.
by laughing about it.
That's what I love about a job is,
yeah.
is the goss,
yeah.
is the vent.
Right, right.
Is the after, you know, the subway ride home, whatever it is. That said, Ellen... You know, we're in part to blame for all these things. I mean, the bitch came out, you canceled everything. She's going to harden to some
yeah,
extent.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like maybe she started out happy-go-lucky and then you take everything from someone because of who they are. And,
yeah.
you know, so she doesn't try. You know, I think she's Mount Rushmore, and I don't think, you know.
Oh, as
yeah,
far as comedians
yeah.
go, you know, it doesn't get any better.
Yeah,
she's
mean
one of the greats.
To me, mean is like when you're dealing with men and with Cosbys and what you hear of, I'm like, mean will take any day.
Yeah, right, right.
But
I know. It's like you realize, like, especially for daily talk show hosts, the pressure of, because I've written on a bunch of them. You got to get there first thing in the morning, and you are already looking at scripts. You're already approving jokes. You're already sitting in on meetings. You're already doing a morning radio show with Orlando to promote that area. Then you got to go through wardrobe. Then you got to get makeup. Then you got to get prepped on the guests you're going to interview. And all the while, you know, you're expected to be nice to everybody. You're doing it the next day.
No,
it
first of all,
all
I don't think
again.
It's too high an expectation. But now that we know. We also have to take everything into context. You know, for me, it's very hard because I believe in almost no punishment and no prison. Like, I can explain away everything.
Really?
Like if you show me a man who's on death row or somebody who's killed a bunch of people or something, I'd be like, well, his father, hold on, let's go back.
Yeah.
His father kept him in a corner.
Uh-huh.
5 years old. Like, I can take the full context and be like, I don't know. I can explain everything away in a way that, like, just extreme compassion almost.
Well, it's a deep philosophical question is, like, why is there good and evil, or how much of that is circumstance? How much of it is your wiring? Some people
yeah.
come from perfectly good upper class families and they go on to kill people because there's just something wrong.
Yeah, there's something wrong. But, you know, it's extreme compassion.
Right.
But yeah, but somebody like Ellen, who started off happy-go-lucky and had to be so funny.
Yeah.
You know, looking at, you know, and I know she wasn't out, but come on, look at her, you know, and, you know, early on. So, whatever. I don't even know how I got to her, but it was like going back. That's the problem with me. I'm too.
Well, that's why it's a podcast.
I have the Trump weave. We have
yeah,
it bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Montreal. So they were very bitter. Like, I was funny early, and I would win something called the Best of Open Mic, which was, like, the audience would vote of all the open micers. Maybe there was, like, 20 open micers or whatever the night was, and they would vote. And then you got to do the weekend.
Oh.
But it never, for me, this is an interesting one. The booker was female
uh-huh.
and a comedian. She had, so it was both. I was dealing with, like, the older kind of stale dudes who hadn't left the small scene.
Yeah.
You know, and then seeing me, and I was already like, I'm leaving, you know, as soon as I'm starting here, because I was serious about it. And then she was like this, she just wouldn't book me for the full week. Like most people who won that and did the weekend, and I did very well, would get like real spots on the weekend, but I never did. I always had to win it and then work the weekend. I never then was like included on the weekend. And so I don't know. I always felt, yeah, I don't know. They were really wildly jealous.
Do you think it was
of anyone who was like, it just wasn't a good vibe to start.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe that's good in a way. I think that can give you an edge. That can propel you and make you tough, and you know. But you know, I think that a lot of the people that are holding on to that, you know, and didn't leave, you know, you can get that in a secondary market versus New York or LA, where you know, people support each other more. I think there is a lot of camaraderie. Whereas if you're a big fish in a small pond, you've got to protect your space a lot more. So how did, I'm just curious about, like, you have 9 siblings, like you turned out amazing. And I don't just mean like, you know, things are going on in your career and all that, but like, you know, you're in a healthy relationship and you are very grounded and you have gratitude. Like, how did the other 9 siblings in your family turn out? Are they all over the place, or do they mostly turn out positive?
Mostly really good.
Yeah.
I will say that my mother, we grew up, yes, very poor on welfare. My mother left the Hasidic community without my father and then moved to Montreal, where there's a lot of good social assistance there. She's from Montreal, so she's Canadian, and we were born Canadian because she was Canadian, so we were born dual. But my mother was very cultured. She still is, you know, she doesn't have a cell phone. She reads. We had books. We were at the library every single weekend.
Oh, we talked about this, right? You know? Yeah.
So she was very, we had like, in the end, like I had an abundance of education, not necessarily school, even though we did have, I went to a good school in the end. It's just like my mother is like very into art and culture in a way, like Gabby, my wife, it's like, she's like, grew up middle class. She's like, I went to, like, nobody, you know, they were watching big action movies. My mother was like, Jody Kravitz, and we have to watch this. And
she used to take you to the museum too. You told me
my grandfather, we went to the museum. Yeah. They had free, anything that had free, like drawing program. Like you go to the museum and you would take a page and draw a Monet or whatever came. Like we did all that. But that said, she also was the exact example we needed. Like my mother, we don't have like a very, my mother is not like my best friend. She's very meat and potatoes. Like these kids are going to be fed, they're going to be sheltered, and they're going to be educated, you know, no frills. And my grandparents were nearby. My grandparents offered to babysit once a week for my mother to go to university. And my mother graduated university the same year I graduated university. Even said mine was 3.5 years, hers was over 12 years. She took a single course, but she never talked she never like told us anything. She would say school's not for everyone. Like she never put pressure, nothing. But she took one class a night for every once a week through the summers. And eventually she was like, oh, I'm graduating this year. Like we looked up.
Unreal.
Because we knew Ma had school night tonight, you know, and she would have a paper. And I remember she had like a group project where it's like some 20-year-old showed up because my mom's taking some undergrad, you know, she was doing an undergrad, but she was doing continuing education, but she had some classes with the regular feed.
Yeah.
Where it's like a group project. And you can't say no to my mother because she turns to you, you're 20 in the class. She goes, would you like to be my partner?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
I gotta be, and my mom has done all the reading. Like she loves, like her school is the break, you know, from her life. So we had this 20-year-old, I'm looking for Constance, for Connie. I'm like, Ma, somebody's here for you. And it's like, there's a
so that's what
you
your
know.
Mom told you when the 20-year-old guy came over?
Yeah.
It's a
and
school
I'm like,
project.
She's like, it's my school. Come in. The kids are settling.
Yeah.
My mother's like, and she just did by example. We just saw that type of tenacity.
You're
like,
right.
Slowly but surely over a decade,
right,
she got her degree. Like she has it. And we went, you know, it
amazing.
Was just.
And was she a calm presence, or
no,
did she get
very stressed?
She gets stressed out.
Very worried. You couldn't kidnap us if we tried. She was very weary of pedophiles and people around us. Like we did when we moved to Canada, some social worker put us in the Big Brother Big Sister program.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
I was involved in it.
Yeah. So you have like, I had like a fake big sister on like a Sunday afternoon would take me like to a fair or to see the pet store or something, like just so I would like, if I had any questions about being a girl or getting my period or whatever, I could ask her. We would just walk around. And my brothers had the Big Brother program. But I remember my brother Schneer's big brother was going to take him to overnight for camping for like, just like boys camping, like I don't know, they would go to a canoe and they would they would spend the night, and that was the end of the Big Brother program for my mom.
Really?
Because she was like, he's not sleeping in a tent with you, I'll tell you right now. So my mother just sat my brothers at home, and she was like, because she really wanted to give, the only reason we were in the Big Brother Big Sister program is because we had left, my dad wasn't involved, she wanted my brothers, I have five brothers, to have a father figure.
Yeah.
But then she right away said, you know what, there's not going to be a father and there's no figure. Okay, this is just the way it's going to be. You could not Michael Jackson us if you tried, because my mother was so leery of other people, like she never would have, I don't think he's going there.
Yeah. So what kind of directions did they go in? What do your siblings do?
A lot of sales, very successful. Uh-huh. Some didn't go to university, started working so soon that now they're like wildly successful in sales.
Really?
Yeah, because it kind of was like in the beginning, and I know one of my sisters had shame about not doing university. And then at the same time, once like all the, once the tech boom was finished, like we realized like most heads of these companies didn't even finish school.
Right.
You know, and it became...
Or they studied a completely different thing than business.
Yeah, and she's... So my sister's in tech sales, for instance, and ended up having more respect by the street cred of how good she became at that. My brother, the same thing. My brother, who was just with me, worked construction, now sales. My little sister, my brother Shmuley and my sister-in-law, shout out Mariana, were staying with me, and my little sister Yehudis was because my other sister Devorah just graduated USC in social work. She's been volunteering for years, and she's been working for children's services as a practicum the past year, and now she'll officially have her job. So everybody came in for that. So she's doing great. My little sister just started my other little sister just started a family, has a baby. We love her. People are doing really well.
Did any of them stay in the Jewish faith? Because I know you.
Yeah, we're all in the Jewish faith.
Oh, I thought you kind of slid from it.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you know, I'm scissoring now, but you know, scissoring. But still, it's like, you know, it is what it is. Like, you know, I it's like when my mother found out I was going by Robbie, because in the beginning when I was an accountant, I went by Rivka. Just my name. But then when I was starting to do, I really wanted to keep my job. I was like, this is the greatest thing to happen to me. Like,
yeah.
I won't do, like, I'm just, money is the only thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm not somebody, I've been poor. I don't like a struggling artist. It does nothing for me. And it's only when I had that job that I even thought of about becoming, thinking what I would do, or I never thought like that, what I would do or something like that, a dream.
Yeah.
If anything, we were told we couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like if we wanted to do something, she'd be like, well, I don't know if I can pay for all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in the end, she randomly did educate us and was the perfect example we needed for tenacity and working and just one foot in front of the other. But
how much was Judaism involved in all of that? Did you feel like you were part of a community, like the Jewish community in Montreal?
Yeah, we were, like, you know, we were in a more religious community still, not as religious as we were in New York, but we were, my mother went to shul and stuff like that. We were kosher. I was always like the most religious kid at my new Jewish school. Like it was a less religious school. It was still religious to most people, but it was still not fanatic.
Right.
Like I was born into. But I was still the most fanatic at that school. Right. I was kosher always.
How does that work at school, being kosher? You just bring your own stuff?
Well, the school was kosher.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'm saying most of those families, they ate non-kosher at home. Maybe they could order pizza or something.
Right.
So I would go to friends' houses and I would have, they would be having steak or something, and their mother would make me, which is very nice, but, you know, I would make me like a kosher mac and cheese or something uh-huh. that I could eat. But my mother, I remember when I started going by Robbie, because I didn't want the company to find out that I'm doing stand-up, because I don't even care about it. I'd rather have... I'm here. I'm committed to the firm.
Yeah.
Accounting. It's my shit. You got me.
Yeah. I got two dress suits and...
I'm like ready to go. Like, I don't even care really about this.
Yeah.
You know, even though it felt like right at home. Uh-huh. But it was like, you don't get to feel at home.
Right.
You know, that's not a thing. So I went by Robbie, which is my uncle's name. My uncle Rob. I never heard a bad thing about him. I wanted to keep the R initial. And I think it was, you know, the fact that it was a kind of a unisex, or I was starting to inch into being a dyke, but to, I don't know to what extent. I mean, obviously I got gayer over the years, which I always wonder if you get gayer, do you have to come out again? Like, you know, I wasn't as gay.
it's like getting remarried. You just,
it's like, actually it's reached another level. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? It's like, I didn't think it would end up here, but here we are. And my mother was like really upset that my name, well, I'm not calling her Robbie, and you tell her, and such a, you know, a non-Jewish name, you know, thinking that I would be ashamed. But I'm like, Ma, within 3 seconds of me being on stage, what are people going? Yeah. I wonder if she's Catholic. Like, there's no, you know. Yeah. So when you ask me, I'm Jewish. Like, yeah.
It's just so ingrained in you. It's just part of you.
Yeah, it's more of a, you know, I know that people debate, is it a culture, is it a religion? Like, there's no debate about it. It's like, it's everything and it's neither thing, whatever you think.
Yeah, my wife is Jewish and she grew up in New York City and the Upper West Side, which was very, and they did not practice Judaism, but she grew up going to kosher delis and, you know, everything around her was Jewish. So she considers herself culturally Jewish, but not... We didn't raise our kids with it at all.
Oh, I gotta put in milk or something or this. Okay, I'll be right back.
Do we have milk?
Oh, okay. Oh, if we got nothing, do we have sugar?
Yeah, I think there's some sugar.
Thank you. I'm very No, but that's the thing. It's like, well, your kids are Jewish.
They are Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yeah.
Or if you don't think that, I mean, so it's like. I don't know why we have to settle any of these debates. Like, people love, is it this? It's like, not everything is like, it's just the debate. Like, it's just, we can just leave it there. So I don't know.
Yeah. I grew up Irish Catholic, and I always say
that's very similar.
I have God in my heart, but I don't have the Bible in my head. It's like, you know, the spirit of it, you know, walking a life of charity and, you know, humbleness and believing in a higher power. Like, I took all that stuff away from it. But there's a lot of stuff that I left behind. So, you know.
For me, it's like exactly that. It's like, I think it's as fantastical that we're living here.
Hmm.
That there would be an afterlife. Or, I mean, I'm not plugged into the wall. I don't have batteries and I'm running. I think that's wild.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine, you know, maybe there's not, you know, there's nothing I don't believe in. I can believe in all of it. What trips me up is a very specific narrative. Like when you get into the Catholicism or the, you know, and this saint and then Joseph and then his father, Jesus's father, but the mother was, and then the cousins, like, okay, we maybe have a general feeling at most.
Right.
And now you have such a specific, if you do this, and then this on this, it's just, that is too specific to me. Not to say that it's not one of a billion possibilities.
Right.
I give you that.
Mm-hmm.
I give everything a possibility.
Well, I think it's the literal interpretation of text.
Oh, bro, thank you so much.
You know, text, you've got text in the Bible that was written,
thank you so much.
2,000 years ago. You have dialogue in the Bible that was spoken 300 years before it was written down. And then they're trying to pick apart the verbiage of whether or not a man can lay with a man. It's like, well, that's an oral thing that was passed down for 300 years.
No, now
you debate. So, you know, I think that what's great about living in a country like this, and obviously Montreal is very multicultural as well, is that you can pick stuff you like from each and make it your own.
Yeah, you can or you can't. You could do it like I don't know. It's just We've never solved it before. We're never solving it now. You know, I don't think, like, for instance, like world peace is just, it's fantasy, just like the tooth fairy is.
Yeah.
It's never existed.
Right.
It will continue not to exist. It's not, I mean, people, New Jersey isn't even together. You know, we haven't even solved like a single state. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's problems in a building complex. There's problems in a neighborhood. Right. Let alone the world.
Right.
People can't even stay married. I mean, it's like, I just think these are all fantasy ideas. They're great. They're definitely better things to live forward. I think, like you said, charity, like helping others is to me the best of the best religion that we could try.
Yeah.
Just if you even help one or two people, whoever or what, even helping yourself if you're down and out and taking care of yourself. It's like I tell my little sister, because we all moved out early because my mother was like, you know, at 18, you could pay her rent, you could move out, or you could, you know, go to school. Like,
yeah.
There wasn't, you know, and I'm like, bitch, I'm not paying. I don't even have my own room. Like, well, what am I paying for the bottom bunk? Like, I'd rather pay rent and, like, you know, have a bitch over. Like,
yeah,
what am I doing? So, but my little sister, you know, when I was just telling her what a, like, how proud I am of her. I'm like, you know, it's a thankless job when you know, a lot of people are filling out their taxes. Do you have a dependent? Do you have a child? It's like, you have a dependent. You have a 20-year-old, fully grown woman that you have to make sure is well-fed, inspired, fulfilled, you know, getting, working, sheltered, emotionally okay and stable. And it's just, you have a dependent and it's yourself. It's a thankless job.
Right.
If you even can help yourself and take care of yourself, and then when you're strong enough to take care of somebody else,
right,
like the mask on the airplane, then that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. We just, you know, you hear a lot, like, we have so many wars happening right now. It's like, well, we just want peace. It's like, well, that's not like a thing right now.
Yeah.
Anymore. Like, it's never been a thing, it seems. And I guess men set up society and now we're ingrained in war. Like, women to women, we'd never, like, think to resolve something, I'm going to bash her head in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's like we would talk for like the Middle East, if it was started by women, if it was women thousands of years ago, and we were wanting to share the land or something, we'd be like, well, her loofah's already in the shower. Like,
yeah.
Why don't you use it? We'll come in next week. Like, should we get a work wheel going? Like, we would, like, literally just talk for 10 years, not war for 10 years.
Yeah.
Which are both kinds of war, but one is talking.
Right.
And I don't know. So now we're in this and it just feels like too exponential to...
I wonder if there was ever any societies, I know there's been science fiction movies about it, that were women, that were led by women on islands where there was a matriarchy, a political system that was matriarchal. And I wonder how that played out.
Listen, there would be a lot of other issues too. I'm not saying it's perfect. And also women are informed by men. So we'd have to, like, there's no... These are all also fantasy. Like, basically, we live in the world as it is from I don't have faith in our generation that we're going to be, oh, there's never been world peace. My generation is going to do it.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like,
I just,
so I don't even think that large scale.
Yeah.
Anymore. I just, like you, like, just my sister's a social worker helping, you know, every family that she helps every week is, like, feels like lifting the world. And
mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So
right.
Just... if everybody can focus a little bit more. But yeah, we have so much going on now that I don't know. But yeah.
Well, let's talk about what's going on in your career right now.
Yeah.
My God.
My God.
It's so I actually
right?
didn't know. I mean, I hang out with you at the store and I saw you on Hacks, which you were great
Thank
in.
You.
Great
Thank you. Thank
in.
You. Apparently, I'm in the last two episodes as well. So,
really?
So keep an eye. I think
but
I'm in five episodes.
But you got a ton of shit going on
yeah.
now. You're developing a show with HBO.
Yes. Sold it in the room. Fantastic.
Sold it in the room. That doesn't happen. Nobody
no,
does that.
I felt like it was a movie.
Yeah. So you go in and you're with your agents.
I can't even talk about anything, but
can't
go
even
on.
Talk about it.
But
okay.
Very exciting.
So you go in, you sell a show to HBO. They love you. You were in Vogue magazine
today.
Week.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. Listen, I'm a cover girl, baby.
I love it.
I'm a cover. I am low key pretty.
You are.
You're going to know this about me, okay?
Yes.
I mean, but low key.
Yep.
Low key, I actually, and I have beautiful eyes.
Let me say.
I got green. I know. I'm telling you.
That's why you wear the wire rim, so you get a little more access to
those orbs. I keep it light. My natural features.
Great skin.
Fantastic skin. I get that from my mother as well.
You know, I never noticed is your ears. You have great ears.
Amazing. Cute, small.
Yep. Cute and small.
Perfectly proportional.
Uh-huh. Yep. You're not hard on the eyes.
Not hard on the eyes. I'm a Vogue cover girl, baby. I'm not on the cover. Yet. Yet.
Yet. But okay, you're part of like a, I guess a pretty hip lesbian couple, which is pretty cool. Are you a power couple?
Listen, Gabby became a lesbian a minute ago. She's already the biggest lesbian in the world.
Yeah, I love it.
It's like, first of all, when she came out, it's like, I had to come. I never came out. I realized I never even told nobody. I was like caught when I was 17. I kind of was like, it's not true. You know, and I just like lived as a gay person, but just didn't. You know, my family would lay low, but as my hair, my brother said, what's with your hair? You know, my sister says it's such a shame. Like, you know, like she thinks like with my figure, I would wear this or that. You know, she's like, oh, you were supposed to be the pretty one.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm like, I think I still am pretty, like low key.
I think you're low key pretty.
Thank you.
And Gabby, is it Wendy? Is that
yes.
Right? Gabby Windy, if people don't know, she was on The Bachelorette and The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And Dancing with the Stars, she came in second place.
Yeah.
She was a cheerleader for the Denver Broncos.
5 years, go Broncos.
I mean, this is a hot catch.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
What I've done is, because dykes do get mad at me. Lesbians get mad at me like that I don't like, they didn't see me at Pride or I didn't post for the GLAD, or I didn't make I didn't speak up for the. Do you see what I've done for this community?
You're banging a cheerleader,
like literally NFL cheer. Like, like for me to get her, it's like Michael Jordan levels, like in proportion. Like I'm literally an inspiration to this community.
Yes, yes.
And you want to ask me what I've done for the? What the fuck has your ugly ass done with the community? I got Gabby. The bitch had 25 boyfriends 2 years ago. And now I'm married to her.
Yeah.
Like, do you understand?
This is a recruiting drive of A-listers.
Yeah, this is like, what I've done is unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm proud
of you. They should have a float for me at this fucking Pride. Okay, then maybe I'd go. Then maybe I'd go.
So do you get asked to do gay events with her now? Do you get invited to all the big
GLAD
events?
We don't
go
to anything.
You don't?
No. No. But Gabby is not. Oh,
that's her
why
now.
Why is my phone on fully?
Stop talking about me.
I'm on a pod.
Put it on speaker.
Oh, no, this is Carrie.
No.
You're on Fitzsimmons' pod. Hi. Okay, so. Oh, I can't wait. I miss you. The what's going on? Oh, great. Okay, I'm going to call you in the car on the way back. Okay, bye.
Who's that?
Person I'm making the show with.
Oh,
yeah,
nice,
Carrie.
Okay, so you're actively working on it now.
Oh yeah,
yeah, love it.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Well, you got stand up. How much stand up are you doing on the road these days?
Tremendous.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's tremendous. We just finished like kind of a big leg. Then I have, actually, this is, I just locked this in, Chicago. I'm finally coming back to you, I believe, June 20th. Minneapolis, June 21st. End of August, I will be back in Pittsburgh at the Bottle Rocket. 4 shows instead of 1 this time.
What about Canadian dates?
I did a Canadian theater tour, my first tour. So Canada, you're up next year now.
Making that 70 cents on a dollar. I just did that. I did Toronto. And I get the booking, and it's this, you know, it's what I make.
It's decent, yeah.
It's what I make. It's my quote. And I get up there, and I get the check.
No, it's
and
brutal.
I'm like, what? Where's the other 30% of this fucking money? Plus, then you got to pay all these taxes.
You get the taxes
on top
back.
Of the exchange rate. Oh, you do?
Yeah, you'll declare them when you make your taxes as the accountant coming.
Okay.
Okay, because the thing is, you're not going to pay taxes again. You already paid taxes.
Yeah, oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Okay, versus everything you make here, you'll have to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. There, you're kind of done, and if there's a difference in the rate, you'll get back.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I loved working up there. Toronto crowds are amazing.
It's the best. Toronto's the sickest city in the world.
It really is.
Yeah, shout out to Toronto. Love you. Comedy Bar.
Comedy Bar. That's where I was.
Unreal.
Yeah. And now they get the second room.
I know. You know what? I'm so married to the old Comedy Bar. That's my home club.
Yeah.
The Comedy Bar on Bloor. But now I really want to do the one on Danforth because I was speaking to Tolev. You know Tolev.
Yeah.
Steph. And she was like, it's the best club. And I was like, fuck, you know what? Because I said no to the Danforth because I didn't want to, like, I wanted to be at my home club. But Gary, I'm coming to the Danforth next time.
It's like the whole front row. It's got this wide front row.
Unreal. He knows what he's doing.
And everybody's right in front. It's kind of like the OR if it was twice as wide, yeah. That front row.
Yeah. Do you perform the Cellar?
In New York?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where I started.
Yeah. So the Cellar downstairs, I feel like is like that too. Wide.
Yeah, right, right.
I love that room.
Yeah, that connection. I just did this gig in Cincinnati, actually in Kentucky. It's like 10 minutes over the border from Cincinnati. And it was an old church.
Mm.
And it holds about 150 people. We did four shows over the weekend. And it was like the most, it's like, it's not about the money always. It's about the, you know, you could go.
It's first about the money and then everything else.
Well, I think
kidding.
As long as over the course of the year, you're making what your nut is. It's great to mix in these smaller gigs. I swear to God, I came home with 15 new minutes of material.
No, it's
it was
the best.
So intimate. It was amazing.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's what are the clubs you work in L.A.? I see you're at Largo sometimes.
Yeah, I do the Largo a lot. I do the Largo a lot. I love Flanny, who books that.
Mark Flanagan.
And I really wanted to get into that. And he took to me and has been a lovely support. I do the Improv. I love Rita at the Improv.
Rita's the greatest.
And, you know, I do all the small rooms still and all the stuff in between.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, I miss the Satellite every day. It's been 5 years since COVID, but I don't know. I was just getting into that spot. I really like it there. But yeah, I do all the small rooms too.
Yeah. All right. It's time for Fastballs with Fitz.
Oh, fuck yeah. Let's do it. So do people call you Fitz?
Yeah.
What do you want me to call you?
Call me Fitz.
I love that.
Yeah.
Fitz.
Guy wears a hat like this, calls himself Fitz. You feel like you know somebody.
It's the best.
You feel like if you needed to make a bet, you know a guy now.
I do. I'm so happy to know. And you're a father. It's nice to have in my life people who, like, you know, are men.
Yeah.
Grown men.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what is your closest friendship in your life?
Probably my sisters. I mean, I like having friends. I have very close friends, but having a sister is, it's like you don't even need friends. Like I do, like I'm happy to have friends. And Rox and Carm, I love you. But Natalie, I'm not forgetting. But having like Dvorah and Yehudis and just, I don't know, it's a little more like baked in.
It's baked in and there is... For me, it feels like no matter who the friend is, there's always still a level of you met this person later in life and you still have to work on it. I feel like with a sibling, there's no work. It just is what it is. You have a shared experience. You know, not to say that you're talking about your family all the time, but you come from a mindset like your siblings all came from the same.
Yeah, we understand. Like, Ma's retarded. She doesn't have a cell phone. If she tells you, you know, you got to go pick her up at 10:30, she'll be outside at 10:30 waving you down. Like, we all get it. That said, it's not like I don't work on my relationships. We've had, like, even with sisters and stuff, you know, we've had, like, a lot of people, like, either dipping in and out of the family. You know, we've had, like, a lot of trauma. Like, some people need breaks and whatever.
Yeah, right.
And also, I do have friends where I don't have to work at all. Like, Natalie and I fight like sisters. You know, most recently when I was staying in Toronto, I insisted on staying with her rather than the hotel because it's a way for me to see her. But we actually realize I've outgrown staying with her.
Yeah.
After I flooded the toilet and whatever.
Are you demanding on her?
I mean, am I demanding? No, a pill bottle fell down the toilet and it took $600 for them to. So I don't know how the pill bottle. She had a very rickety cabinet on top of her thing and I flushed it. I don't even know what happened. It happened so fast. I couldn't even grab whatever fell in.
And a plumber had to come over and
$600.
Take it out. Wow.
So we realized just for the sake of the friendship, you know what? If they give you a free hotel, Take the hotel. I said,
always
okay.
Take the hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't understand that. My family doesn't understand that. I go to New York and I stay in a hotel a block away.
Yeah.
What is the closest you ever came to a physical altercation on stage?
A physical? Not close, except for in Toronto at Yuck Yucks, which I don't never really performed or got in on that. A man took out his penis. There was like a bachelor party or something. And I had some type of a joke. And he said like, oh, you know, you want to see it? And I said, no. And he was like taking his penis out. And then his friends, security did. There was no security.
Wow.
But his friends, thank God, I think removed him or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he facing you or the audience when
right
he was pulling it out?
Right facing me. He was like, oh, my yeah, God. Right there.
Isn't that amazing in our line of work? Like, that's your workplace that
yeah, of
night.
Course.
And somebody pulled their penis out.
Yeah.
And they just left. There was no, like, charges from HR or a lawsuit. It's just what we do on any given night.
Yeah. And you know what? It wasn't that traumatizing. It's
yeah.
Fine.
Right.
I don't remember it.
Right.
I'm like, he's a loser. Like, I don't know. I'm happy it wasn't a big deal. Like, if I was like, I don't, you know, I'm not. First of all, if you're traumatized, fine. But, you know, it takes a lot for me to, you know, get there.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, I obviously don't think it should be happening, but it can happen.
Sure.
Especially and now that I live in LA, I mean, you could be at a red light and the same thing happens.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, it's not just your place of work.
Who is your best Asian friend?
You know, I would say Irene, too. But I don't know. I have a bunch of Asian friends. Probably Irene, because she's also a dyke. So it's not like I have to see her a million times. Like, we right away know each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like Jews see each other. They know it's like, if I see, like, a butchy dyke, it's like, you know, we understand the predicament we're in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a more of an understanding friendship.
Uh-huh. I like that. Yeah, you know? She's great. She's playing that club that I was just in
Cincinnati. Oh, really?
She's
great.
There next week.
Great, yeah. And I don't get to, yeah.
There are two types of people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
Rich and the poor.
Wow. It's that simple.
Everything else, it's I don't take the bait on anything else.
Yeah.
It affects the most people. And it includes all your bullshit that you're crying about. Mm-hmm. Anything else is a distraction issue at this point and has been for a long time.
Wow. So race is not as important as
no.
socioeconomic.
No, because yeah. it's integrated into rich
right.
or poor.
Right.
You'll notice most people are poor. Also, you know, often brown or black people in this country and other countries it varies. But you'll notice that it integrates everything.
Yes. Wow. I like that.
Yeah, those who come from money and those who don't. That's why when I met Gabby early on, first, you know, everybody, you know, I met her outside. The second question I asked was first, it's like, who are you? Somebody said, The Bachelor. I said, The Bachelor's gay. I don't know. Maybe they make a gay bachelor now. I don't know. And then it's like, oh, you know, I asked her, does she come from money or not? I was like, that's the second question you asked me. I'm like, well, to me, it's like religion.
Really?
To me, it's like dating outside of the faith. Like, I don't, like, dating a Catholic is not as interesting. Somebody grew up rich, like I did. Somebody grew up rich. It's day in and day out your way of living. You know, even if I have money now and I go to a store and I want raspberries, but they're $6.99. I'm not in the mood to spend $6.99 on raspberries. I understand money's in the account. I'm not in the mood to spend $6.99. I'm not
right.
there yet.
Right.
You know, I don't have to explain. Somebody who grew up like me,
mm-hmm.
we understand.
Right.
So I think you either come from money or you don't.
Would you guess that I come from money or not?
I'd say probably middle class.
Upper middle class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned already that you did comedy in college.
Right.
And you would go around. And that feels like a very rich thing.
Yeah.
That right. you were in college and
my
doing comedy.
My dad paid for college.
And you mentioned New England.
Yeah.
So there was a lot, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I think my general sense of judgment of other people and entitlement and snobbery and slight racism, I think that all kind
No, I think you've been humbled a bit.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah.
You don't feel maybe as that. Maybe you had some of that gung-ho in the beginning. But I think, I think for white men it's probably difficult because they probably expect the world. And if it doesn't happen, then it's really... Because I think Fran Lebowitz had the great quote, if you're a white man in this country and you didn't become president, you failed. And I've always thought of that because like they have that. A lot of like, you know, you have a lot of great examples. Me, it's like, oh, I'm lucky to be here.
Right. Well, we grew up middle class, but my parents both grew up poor in the Bronx, and my mom was one of seven. And so
what number is she?
She's the youngest.
So I'm seventh too.
Oh, okay.
I'm always looking for sevens because you know how like people are like, oh, I have such a middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
Or I'm the eldest, I'm the baby. I'm like, what's a seven like?
Yeah, yeah.
Am I a typical seven?
So I think I inherited their mindset of, you know, working hard. And my mom was very frugal, to say the least. And I have that. I just washed and waxed my own car this morning.
Yeah, well, you did. You knew how to do that. That's, by the way, a really nice thing to know how.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know when I first got my car, my first car here in LA, like 7 years ago. I was washing it, but I scratched the whole car. I didn't know I needed a type of
You towel. Need the microfiber.
You know, I just used like a schmanta, like just a nothing towel.
Yeah.
And I have like, I permanently scratched the car for, I just got it. I mean, it was a used car for $3,600, but it's like, for me, it was like so brand new.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking like, why is it so scratched? And then as I was doing it, I was like, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Right. I did that. I used to do it in the summers. It was one of my jobs was I would wash people's cars. So are you going to buy a new car now that things are kind of taking off for you?
No, I got a new car like maybe a few years ago now. I was able to trade that car that I got, that $3,600 car, was a Toyota Corolla Celica.
Yeah.
Ended up becoming vintage and selling for $6,000, which is like
wild. Yeah, the Celica's a great car.
Yeah, because it turned 30.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, like if a car turns 30. So this guy gave me $6,000, so I got my car. I split the difference. I got a car for $13,000.
What'd you
buy? I bought a 2007 Porsche Cayman base.
Nice.
Yeah. It needs a new water pump. The light in the back hasn't worked since the
beginning. Repairs are not cheap on a Porsche.
But I haven't done them and they're fine.
Yeah. Good.
I've been driving for years. Listen, I fill my own coolant.
Mm-hmm.
The light comes on. It's like, yeah, the water pump's leaking. It's like, okay, so I'm just going to fill my own coolant once a month. I'm not buying a $600. Like, I will drive this car till the wheel, you know, it's a 17-year-old car, whatever. And it's fantastic.
I love it. All right, last question, and then we're going to send you off back into Hollywood to continue your quest for greatness.
I can't wait for greatness, guys. You heard it here.
When's the last time you apologized to somebody?
I apologize all of the time.
Mm.
My sister Yehudis, she came. She was very demanding at my house. She came so she was sleeping on the couch last minute. I was only supposed to host Shmuley and his wife. But she said, she wants to come too. I said, no problem, come. Stay on the couch. Suddenly, we can't go to CVS. I picked her up at the airport. First of all, right when I get to the airport, their flight landed 5:10.
Yeah.
They don't understand I'm going to pick them up. It's like, you don't have snacks? Like, you didn't pick up pretzels and oranges? I go, first of all, it's thank you for coming to pick me up at the airport. Anyway, we got into a fight that night because she wanted to go to CVS because she lives in Canada and she likes to check out CVS. I said, what do you need at CVS? She said, she needs an enema. She's doing these enemas. I'm like, do you actually need the enema? And she's like, yeah, you know, I get backed up. I need this enema. So she makes me take her to CVS. She doesn't even get the enema. She just got snacks.
Really?
She's like, actually, no, you know, they didn't. So I was like, you know, it's just I was doing so much. So she was demanding all weekend, but she also felt like I was like asking her to like clean up too much or whatever. But it's like it's also Gabby's space. You're staying on the couch last minute. So, you know, and she was good about folding that away. But then she would be like, oh, I need this type of milk or you don't have this or your coffee is like this. Like, I actually can't use that coffee. So but then I apologized to her.
For what?
For picking at her, because I was picking at her too much.
Yeah, right.
And, but I really wanted to get her to admit that she was demanding, which everybody agreed to. But I said, I love you. And, you know, and that's how it is in my family too. Like, she's my baby sister.
Yeah.
She's demanding, whatever. But I right away apologized. I was actually hurting her feelings. at one point. So I said, look, I'm sorry, but you are demanding. So it was a sorry but.
Yes.
It was a sorry but.
A sorry but has got a big asterisk on it, for sure. I don't accept sorry buts.
Yeah, no, a sorry but to my little sister you'd have to accept because she's not taking any accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
To Gabby, even a little thing, if I said she didn't like I was watching the hockey game yesterday, the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And it was brutal.
It was brutal.
Yeah, so I was watching.
5-1.
So she didn't like, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I was upset about the game. And she goes, oh, it sounds like you're upset at me. So you know what I said? Later, 2 minutes later, I said, you know what? I'm sorry that you thought I was upset at you. I was upset, obviously, at the Habs. So she's reading. So she's at the Leafs. You know, she's reading. She doesn't know. But she was like, oh, thank you so much. You know, I'll go out of my way to extra apologize, even if it's something light to her. But sisters is a different relationship. They may get a sorry but a little bit more.
Yeah, I also think that's a very healthy part of the Jewish culture is that there is... You don't leave things under the surface.
No.
They are brought up, they are confronted, they are dealt with, and the Irish culture is just, you just push it down.
No, it never even gets down. In the Jewish, it's all just right here. You can see right, it's like, what the hell? This is your towel? Whose towel is this?
Right.
I'm like, hello, whose towel is this?
Yeah.
Oh, that's mine.
Yeah.
I was like, well, are you gonna, you know, why don't you put your stuff in Shmuel's room? But he's going to sleep now, so make sure you got all your stuff for the morning. She's like, I have everything. Then he's in bed. She's like, oh, I need my phone charger. I'm like, I told you not to wake him. You know, this is your brother Shmuley. He's waking up very early for his flight. Oh, yeah, Shmuel, can I just go in? And this is like, you know, so it's all right here. It never even has time to sink.
So how big is your place?
My place now is really nice and big.
Really? So you got
this is like
all
a pinch
people.
Me place. Well, we have one extra bedroom.
Yeah.
So, no, my sister's on the couch. It's a big apartment.
Is it a fold-out couch?
Yeah. Not in the living room. But yes, in my second bedroom, which I use also as an office, it's a fold-out.
Okay.
It's a sofa bed.
Yeah.
Which, you know, those can be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I bought a support.
Good under. For you.
I bought and then the top, I bought foam.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite nice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I supplemented. I'm at such a point where I don't have to. We don't have the base. We have just a level higher than the base.
Well, we're all happy for you.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on the show.
I hope you had a good time. I had honestly an amazing time. You're a doll. Lovely. I am Robbie Hoffman. Follow me on Instagram at Robbie Hoffman. My podcast, Too Far.
Yes. Too Far is, and it's a Patreon podcast.
Patreon only. We are Patreon only, the Too Far podcast. We do not accept any corporate dollars because they won't give them to us.
Is this your wife doing this?
No, it's just me, the Too Far pod.
Oh.
New York Times calls the podcast addictive.
Really?
$5 a month. We do 3 episodes a month. So 5 divided by 3, 166 for less than the price of a cup of coffee. You can subscribe,
which is also addictive. Yes, that's great. Yeah. I tried to look up your tour dates from your website. It only gave me May 23rd at Brea.
I'm going to be in Brea this Friday. I forgot to tell anyone. I'm doing one show. It's a last. I'm filling a 9:45 p.m. slot that they had. I said, sure, I will be there. Brea. I'm there Friday. I don't even know when this comes out. So you probably
missed it.
Comes
out tomorrow. So
oh, it comes out tomorrow. Brea.
Yeah. Yep.
Tomorrow, Friday, I will be there.
July 2nd in Edmonton.
Yes,
Alberta.
I'm going to Canada. You asked me about Canada. I forgot. I'm going. I'm there Canada Day weekend. I am there July 2nd and July 3rd, 2 shows
the
only.
The Grindstone Theater.
The Grindstone. It's going to sell out. It's very small. Edmonton, run and do it. It's 2 shows. They will sell out. And I'm not, I don't care about the DMs. I don't care. Your sister, cancer. I don't care. I can't increase the venue size.
No, you just got to get there fast. And then 9/11, which is a national holiday through 9/13, you're going to be in D.C. where one of the planes actually hit one of the buildings.
I know. I am very worried about D.C., but... I do like going there because my cousin, Daniel Lutowski, lives in D.C. He's a Republican, very nice man. Daniel, I look forward to seeing you in D.C. I am very worried about flying then.
Yes. Get in on 9/10.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't connect through Newark. All right. Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you this week at the store.
Oh, I can't wait.